We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Michael Kopech should join us in just a minute or two. This hour on the Score brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. White Sox making the media rounds. You've got Steve Stone on today with Mully and Haw. You've got Lawrence with Rick Hahn tomorrow. Michael Kopech with us today. Sold out Sox Fest this weekend at McCormick Place. It's an exciting time.
It's all happening. New venue for Sox Fest. And then we got to wait. And then the season will start, and then we got to wait. Well, let's not make any conclusions until they've logged 35, 40 ball games.
That's how baseball works every year.
There is lifetime, and there is baseball time. One moves quickly, one does not. I have begun to peruse some of the prop bets for Super Bowl 54. And we're going to request of you listeners this year a little bit of help with our show pot, which got healthy over the weekend. We won a little bit of money. I'm no longer saying earned. I've lost investment from my vernacular when it comes to sports wagering, and I've lost saying earned. It's all luck when you win. I've given up on that idea because I've been more reckless this year, even though I'm in the black for the season. But going to maybe three or four times over the next several shows put up Twitter polls and ask you listeners where you think we should put our money on. We'll do MVP and we'll do first to score a touchdown. Those are always the first to score a touchdown always has been one of my favorites. And I'll probably play one or two of those guys. But you listeners will have a say so. You will have an investment in our bet.
That's a good way to do it. Do they get anything if their bet wins?
Just the pride of being
McNeil
and Parkin Show listeners. Yeah, we'll throw them a party. We'll buy them pizza. I don't know. We'll do something.
Mob.
I don't know. Mob.
Yes, well, so mob. Can I give you a first touchdown, first impression?
Sure.
Just briefly, and we can kick it around a little bit later on. But just a first impression, looking at the board.
Yeah. Let me guess. It's a Kansas City Chief.
It's actually not.
Because they'll win the toss and defer.
Yeah, and they've fallen behind early in these games just recently.
And the 49ers, if they win the toss, will want the ball because they'll want to thump your ass right out of the chute.
Certainly possible. And running game shouldn't slump. Right? Like, it might take a little bit for the Chiefs to settle into the game and all of that, but the Niners should be able to run the ball fairly consistently and fairly early. 7.5-1, Raheem Mostert with Tevin Coleman injured for the Niners. The Niners' backfield has been a problem to figure out all season long. But now with Coleman's injury, Breda being bad, and Raheem Mostert coming off a monster game, 7.5-1 on the starting running back for the Niners to score the first touchdown. It's not bad.
Yeah, that makes him one of the favorites. Damian Williams also lower odds. Still good payoffs. Often the favorites are only 3-1 or 4-1. Sometimes as high as 5-1, but that's a nice payoff for your favorites to start at 650. And I think it's Kelsey's 850.
Yeah, the field at 500 because there's always the random score that that can come in. But we'll get back to Super Bowl props and bets obviously throughout the week and leading up to the game next week. But before we bring on our next guest, he has to be introduced very personally and professionally by big White Sox fan Chris Tannehill, ahead of Michael Kopech.
And our starting pitcher is Michael Kopech.
He seems to be a guy, he does everything really hard. He's every single pitch he's trying to throw to
back. Check swing, strike three. Kopech's first strikeout in the majors. Fastball, strike three. Swing and a miss, strike three. Kopech washes away Cave.
Who are you?
I've put everything I have into the sport. Since I was 4 years old, I'm a baseball player. It's as simple as I can put it.
Kopech to Castellanos. On the corner, strike three. Kopech aced him on three pitches, and that was a rather fun first inning for Michael.
I'm just mindful about who I am now as I've ever been in my life.
Swing and a miss for strike three. A fastball tailing away, and that exploded outside.
To answer your question, in my eyes, cocky or whatever as this may sound, Michael Kopech is a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Sox fans very excited. We are excited to talk to our next guest, one of the most interesting guys on the White Sox, ahead of one of the most interesting seasons they've had in a long time, Michael Kopech, on the McNeil and Parkin Show by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Michael, thanks so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm not sure I'm deserving that intro I just got, but I appreciate it.
Oh, that's just the beginning. We're just on the floor of this stuff, man. You know when getting a haircut becomes news, that's when you've arrived, right?
Yeah, I guess so, huh?
Wait, what's it? Come on. There's a lot of ways you could raise money for charity. You were breaking hearts all over Chicagoland getting your hair cut like that.
Oh, man. No, come on. It's just hair. It grows back.
It's a great mop, though. I mean, you've got Hall of Fame hair.
I appreciate that. That's one vote, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I'm sure you probably get tired of being asked this. How are you feeling, Michael? Let's get that out of the way.
I'm doing great. I got healthy towards the end of last year, and I got some rehab innings in before I took off for the off season, and I came back with a normal off season and not having to do a full rehab stint. And I'm back in Arizona now, and well, I'm in Chicago, but I was just in Arizona and getting healthy and ready for spring. So I'm feeling good and feeling competitive.
A normal off season, except it involved a wedding. This time?
It did involve a wedding, yeah. I can't talk that down. It was normal except for that, yeah.
Wow, taking yourself off the market at 23?
Yeah, I guess when you know, huh?
Congratulations.
Wow, yeah, no
thank
doubt.
Thank you so much. That's I appreciate cool. it.
What? How is it, like, obviously you have been in the spotlight for your athletic talents for a long time, and you have a high-profile relationship, and then you tie the knots. What's it like navigating all of that in the public eye? It's one thing to navigate your sports in the public eye, but how about your personal life?
You know what? I honestly, since deleting social media, navigating my life has been pretty off the radar in general. Vanessa, on the other hand, you know, she's got to live in the spotlight because that's her career. So a lot of times we navigate that together. And having her there and understanding, you know, she's been through it a lot more than I have. And so being the center of attention is something that she's had to deal with, you know, and I say had to deal with a negative connotation, not like it's a bad thing, but it is something that, you know, can be very overwhelming. And, you know, having her kind of talk me through stuff, even just being at Sox Fest in general, she's been huge help to me. So I think really just she's been my rock in all of this, and it's been great to kind of have a different perspective on it.
You know, we on this show, we've both talked about us going to therapy for different things, anxiety, depression, anger management, just between the two of us. So we have been very supportive and have kind of enjoyed watching you talk about your dealing with anxiety and depression publicly. And then you just said your wife has helped you with that and deleting social media. Do you feel not maybe healed, but improved in that area in terms of dealing with kind of the ups and downs of this, given that now that you have been more open about that side of your life?
I definitely do. And, you know, I think it had to do with me allowing myself to open up about it. It was something that I didn't talk about for a long time, and it kind of crippled me because I was so introverted. And not that I'm not introverted anymore, but I'm a lot more comfortable with who I am, and who I am isn't necessarily the center of attention person. You know, I'm not looking for the spotlight. I'm just looking to get my stuff done and get out. And I think I lied to myself about wanting that spotlight for a lot of my career, and, you know, kind of recognizing it for what it is now, and it is my career and it is what I'm passionate about, but it's not just an excuse to get famous, you know, like that side of the game is no longer important to me at all. But what it has done is it's allowed me to really focus on being the best version of myself, and that as a competitive athlete and just as a person. And so to answer your question, yeah, I do feel maybe not necessarily healed. I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't get anxiety anymore, but I'm a lot more comfortable in my own skin.
I'm pumping my fist here to hear you say that, because mental illness, and I've got it, long family history of it. I check a lot of boxes, Michael. You never healed. It's a daily process with medication, talk therapy, and having a support group, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. And it's something that has to be a daily practice, you know. And for me, it's been a routine, you know, a self-care routine, if you will. But it's something that I've had to create for myself to kind of cope with this. And that may sound like overwhelming to some people. Oh, you have to do that just to live a normal life. But you know what? It is just part of me. And for a lot of people, part of their routine in their life would be different to me. But kind of learning to deal with these things and finding things that work for me, it's just really been comforting. And having that support group is, you know, usually family. And having a wife now, that is family. And so I have people around me that are close to me, that love me and care about me. And it makes this stuff a lot easier. And, you know, I think the reason I like talking about it so much is, there's people out there that probably wonder if anyone else goes through this, because I was that person for a long time. And, you know, opening up about it has really allowed me to meet people that have gone through this and have gone through much worse. So it makes my perspective, you know, all the less important, but still that much more valuable.
Michael, what were the watershed moments that led you to seeking treatment? What was the bottom like?
The bottom was just being lost, in a sense. I can't really pinpoint to one thing. You know, I've vaguely talked about having a point of suicidal thoughts, and at that stage in my life, you know, it's not something I'm proud to talk about, but it's something that's very real. And at that stage in my life, I didn't know what I wanted, who I was, what I thought was a normal life, so to speak. And I think by being around people that truly love me and care about me, and not necessarily Michael Kopech, the baseball player, which I, even on my intro there, I've defined myself as a baseball player, but I think now it's more so about me, you know, being a baseball player second. You know, I have a real life and a real support group and a real loving family, and that's really what defines me. And then anything after that is just gravy on top, you know.
When you talk about your routine for self-help, what have you found that works for you?
Yeah, so it's probably different than most people would expect. I've recently turned to God, but also along with that, my views of God have been very open. You know, I grew up in the church, but I grew up without having an idea of what church was. And so for me to kind of put my heart and soul, so to speak, into something that I really thought would open me up has been groundbreaking for me. And along with that, I've continued meditating, and meditation has been something that's really kind of helped me, you know, quiet the storm, so to speak. And on top of that, I've created a routine with just taking care of my body. And taking care of my body, I've noticed, has been a lot easier to navigate my mind. The two things kind of go hand in hand in my eyes, and the idea of cutting any of that out, to me, it just makes it that much more harder for me to kind of cope with my own problems. So just being well-balanced in every sense of the word, and if that's my, you know, spiritual beliefs, if that's my health, if that's mental health, you know, I just have to have a good care routine for self that kind of takes priority over what's going on later, what's going on yesterday. Any of that anxiety is kind of just living through the current moment and taking advantage of what I'm doing right now.
Did you have a relationship, Michael, with alcohol and drugs?
You know, I never had a serious relationship with alcohol and drugs, but I'd be lying to you if I said that through my darkest depressions I didn't turn to alcohol and probably abuse it more than I should have.
Yeah, and it's the type of thing I was wondering as we're talking to Michael Kopech ahead of Sox Fest this weekend. Are you seeing the benefits of this mental clarity, for lack of a better term for it? Are you seeing the benefits of it with your baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all kind of pays off, you know, and not that the end goal is to be a better baseball player from taking care of my mind, but it does affect that, you know. How clear you are in everyday life is going to show up in your day of work too, you know, and for me to kind of just focus on that clarity, and you strive for that clarity. When I get on the mound, you know, it just makes it all that much easier, because that's something I've done my whole life. You know, that's the one place that I truly never really felt anxious, and kind of losing that anxiety and being able to go out there and perform when I'm the calmest I've ever been, I think it can be nothing but beneficial.
So how much are you looking forward to this season? I know for the team, the sky's the limit, but what about for you personally to get back out there after the rehab?
I think my goal is to just be a part of what's happening right now. We have so much great additions that have just happened. And for me, you know, I know I'm going to have to go into spring and be competitive. I know that my job isn't concrete, and I know that I'm going to be a guy that, you know, can't take advantage of, you know, the privilege that I have had in the past, and that's being a priority amongst our starting staff. And I may not necessarily be a priority anymore, but I'm definitely going to fight my way into a position. There's things that I have to do, and there's things that I have to reprove after a surgery. And that's not me asking for pity. That's me just seeing it how it is and looking forward to taking advantage of that competitive side of me.
How close do you think you are to trusting yourself completely physically?
I'm pretty close. You know, I fortunately for me, I was able to go out there last year at the end of the year and have a little bit of, you know, competitive nature when I was in instructs, and I got to face some guys there. I got to throw a few innings there, and I think that really got me comfortable again. So I think once I'm throwing bullpens and back in spring, I'll be full go and I'll be ready to compete.
You talk about, you know, not being as much of a priority. What makes you feel that way? Because I see you on the top of prospect lists and people know about your talent and they got just a glimpse of you. Like, what makes you feel like you're maybe not as big of a piece of this puzzle?
Maybe I shouldn't have worded it that way. I don't want
to. I'm not trying to make a headline out of what you're saying. I'm interested.
No, I understand. And I'm not saying I don't feel important. You know, I just understand that right now there are guys that are healthy and there's guys that have earned their keep. And, you know, like we have just signed Keuchel, and Giolito's coming off a great year, and Lopez has had his experience there, and he's had success there, and, you know, Cease is healthy, and he's going to come back and be better than ever, and I know that, you know. I haven't reproved myself is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And I know that I need to reprove myself. Maybe it's not the team looking at me like I'm not a priority. I don't feel that way. I feel like I need to reprioritize myself by proving myself again.
It's going to be different for you and anybody in a White Sox uniform to have high expectations from your fan base. I mean, this city has been jumping, Michael, with all the acquisitions. 80 wins, not good enough this year. We're expecting 85 and you guys to be in the thick of it in September. Is that reasonable from our standpoint?
I mean, that's our goals. We don't want to take anything for granted by the fans. You know, we wouldn't be in our position without the fans. So I think everybody in the clubhouse knows that the goal is to win. We're not ever trying to go out there and not think about a World Series, but at the same time, day by day is our game plan. You know, we're going to win one game at a time. We're going to win one pitch at a time. And so for right now, an 85-win season, you know, that sounds pretty good. You know, we're shooting as high as we can go, though. We're shooting for win every pitch, win every game. Now, obviously, we're not going to have a perfect season, but we're going to go out there and we're going to learn from the lessons and embrace the good times.
Michael, I know, and we know you got to run, and Sox fans are looking forward to seeing you at Sox Fest, and they're really appreciative of how open and candid you've been in this conversation, so we hope to do it again with you. We appreciate it. But I'm curious in terms of a timeline. I know you hinted yesterday, you know, there might be some extended spring, maybe some time in Charlotte. Rick Hahn has talked about being conservative because of how much you matter to the club. Do you know how it's going to go in terms of an innings limit to make sure that if you guys are pitching in meaningful games and playing in meaningful games in September, that you're a part of this?
I'm not sure of that, to tell you the truth. To be honest, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to pitch the best of my ability. And when they tell me, hey, you need to slow down, then I'll slow down. But until then, I'm going to I'm gonna compete when I need to compete. And I think that realistically, coming off a surgery like I did, they probably are gonna hold back a little bit more. They're gonna be a little more protective, and you know that makes sense. But you know, if I go into it as healthy as I can, and you know, they see that I'm not slowing down any, and that my stamina is there, then maybe I can change a mind. And so I'm gonna do the best I can every time, and hopefully pitch as deep into the season as I can.
All right, and then you got to paint the picture before you go. Paint the picture of what it's like when you and Pat Mahomes are pitching against each other in high school.
Yeah, that was a time that was big for both of us because, you know, I think, you know, Patrick was still trying to decide if he was going to be a football player or a baseball player, and obviously he probably made the right call.
Probably.
He wouldn't have been a great baseball player, but he's doing pretty well for himself. Anyway, and yeah, that day was just – I've never seen more radar guns in a stand, like in the seats, than I did that day, and that was a high school baseball game.
That's awesome.
And we competed against each other like to no end, and that was just, I think what I really enjoyed most about high school was competing against guys like that, and, you know, and guys that really wanted to get you. And I think we both really wanted to get each other. Had the most respect for each other, but we really wanted to get each other. And he was a guy that really got the best out of me every time I pitched, and I like to think I got the best out of him. And that game that you're referring to, he did win. He had a no-hit bid going, and I think carried that all the way through the game. So he ended up with like 16 punchies, and I think I had 12, or maybe vice versa. I don't know, something around those lines. But it was one of the most memorable games I probably ever pitched, and as far as just the atmosphere, and yeah, it was a high school game, so I bet you could imagine how it felt.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It sounds pretty incredible. You got a message to Sox fans on their way out the door, because I can tell you they're excited for this season and for you in particular.
I actually just genuinely want to say to the fans that this is going to be a year that's memorable to all of us. It's something that we're all looking forward to, and you know, we're going to be the competitive team that everybody wants us to be. But it starts in the clubhouse, and so in the clubhouse, it's going to be a brand new energy. And so I look forward to, you know, seeing packed seats this year for the first time in a while.
Michael, thank you so much for your candor, for the time. Our audience on the text line absolutely loves it. We hope you become a regular on the show. We'd love to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to meeting you face-to-face soon, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, guys.
Thank you. That is Michael Kopech of the White Sox ahead of Sox Fest, which kicks off this weekend at McCormick Place.
So Mahomes was the winner over Kopech in high school baseball. Ah, you know what? It was Andy Reid's win.
That's right. That's right. Foreshadowing of things to come. This hour on the score brought to you by CarX. Save $200 on 4 tires installed at CarX. Wide-ranging reactions to that Michael Kopech interview. We got Dave Wonstead in 4 o'clock, but I want to talk about it with you coming up on the score. Bottom of the hour on the score, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Do you want to sign a one-day contract with the Wolves that comes with a $5,000 signing bonus? Go to chicagowolves.com/sprint to learn how to win the Sprint Power Play Payday. Dave Wonstead will join us in 30 minutes. Appreciate Michael Kopech for both his time and his candor. I'm always interested in talking to athletes who are willing to reveal the struggle, because so many of them project just 100% confidence all the time, because that's often what it takes to be successful, and vulnerability is often seen as weakness in professional sports. And Michael Kopech is 23 years old and has come to at least that basic level of understanding that that's not true at a very young age. And he's talked about mental illness before and getting off of social media. I remember there was a great Q&A with him about it on The Athletic. But why I was particularly interested to go down that path with him today was he's now coming off of professional struggle for the first time,
mm-hmm.
right? So like, how did dealing with that struggle of rehab, Tommy John, missing a year of eligibility, deleting social media, all that, how did you deal with the struggle now that you've had some sort of clarity with your mental health, not fixing it, but just clarity with it, you need to work on it, as opposed to before when you were dealing with your success and failures by kind of suppressing those feelings.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. And there also is the complication of rehabbing physical injuries, surgeries, which requires a lot of time by yourself. And for those who suffer from depression, that can be grueling because isolation increases that feeling of separation and being lost, as he described it. I thought it was incredibly courageous, and I think it's fortunate for everybody. Athletes have been willing to more over the last 10 years than the previous, since the beginning of time, collectively, where they're being forthright, they're being transparent about this. And I give credit to your generation and the generation that's coming up behind you for a lot of things, and that's one of them, because for decades and decades, it was something that wasn't discussed, and people didn't think this was real. It is a real illness. It's brain chemistry. It's science. It's not somebody choosing to be sad. They can choose to not treat their disorders, but it's not somebody. Nobody wants to be a depressive. Nobody wants to be, aggressive. People want to be happy. It's not as attainable. Those commercials for the antidepressant medications,
yeah,
those things are as real as the disease itself, man. The fake face with the smile on it people put up. You have no idea how many people suffer from this. Fortunately, higher profile people are being more forthright about it. I applaud him. I enjoyed it.
I did too. I thought it was really interesting and introspective, and I hope that he's a huge piece of whatever the White Sox are going to be over the next 5+ years. Like, if it's him and Giolito as a 1-2, you'll have two easy guys to root for and two easy guys to talk to. Like, those will be guys who can be voices of your team. We talked with Kerry Wood about how it's tough for the starting pitcher to necessarily be the leader of your team. But with those two guys, man, like, they have a mindfulness about them, and talking about the mental side of the game on the mound, that side of it, the approach to it. It would be a good thing for the White Sox.
I mean, even as broadcasters at the age of 23, do a rewind in your head 10 years ago. How difficult it would have been had you been a guy who suffers from mental illness, a guy who has had suicidal thoughts, how next to impossible that might have been for you to express publicly. This is a 23-year-old kid doing it.
Right. My issues are, it's anxiety. It's not the depressive, need to be medicated. It's talk therapy, and I stare at the ceiling, and it takes me 90 minutes to fall asleep because my head doesn't stop going. You know what I mean? And it's not to minimize anxiety, but
you take meds for anxiety?
I don't.
They have those, you know.
I know. It's been discussed. You know what I mean? No, it's been discussed. I don't think that I'm there, but I might be one day, honestly. I don't know. But like, that's kind of where I am with it. You have talked openly about anger and depression.
Well, and opioids too.
Right.
I mean, that was the bottom for me, not wanting to do anything but sit in the basement and watch Goodfellas and have my kids come over, and that was about it. I wanted to spend time with the most important people in my life and do nothing else. When I am in complete shutdown mode is when I'm sick, and that was the worst of it for me.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's not that bad of a bottom, so I've seen so much worse. My goodness.
Sure.
You sit in those rooms, Danny, and you say, "You did what?" It's amazing. But to get better, you have to share those experiences and get the suggestions of others who are in similar situations, and everybody learns from their mistakes. That's the strength of a community.
Well, I was reading one of the articles when Kopech had talked about it, and he didn't touch on that part of it in this interview, but he said one of the troubles with it, or the struggles, is from the outside, the perception is that guys like him have everything. Rich, famous, good looking, healthy, attractive women, right. Celebrity.
Mental illness has no biases.
Yeah.
Whether you are wealthy, whether you are gorgeous, it doesn't matter. It has nothing. It doesn't discriminate. When it gets you, it'll get you.
Yeah. So I just think dealing with that is, I think, something that has led him to that awareness. And it's interesting to hear him say too, like, the mound was always kind of his his peaceful place, yeah. And then it was trying to get there everywhere else in his life.
Yeah, and you know, if there was suggestion or two about eye rolls over the God stuff, not on my end, and I wasn't looking at Danny. I assume not. Whatever it takes, whatever your higher power is that you need for strength, I will not question another man's convictions in that department.
Yeah, you know, like, I am not religious, and a lot of people have sent me messages since I've shared the news about Owen being born at 31 weeks and 4 days, and Steph being in the hospital for a week with labor leading up to it, and how he'll be there for a month or more going forward. A lot of people, so, you know, keeping you in your thoughts, which is normally how I would express those thoughts, and a lot of people have said praying for you, but I don't say don't pray for me because I don't believe. Like, it's to me, that stuff, the only time I will ever get eye rolly about that is if they're preaching it and forcing it on other people. They're saying, like, mm-hmm. my way is the way for you, and they're preaching it onto you. Well, then it's like, hold on a second. Keep between you and me. Make that individual. But that's not what Michael Kopech was doing.
I know. And some people just are thirsty to perceive it as such. They want the pushback.
He wasn't preachy.
No, I didn't think so.
And he was talking about himself. Tanny, for Michael Kopech on the baseball side, we'll start here. What did you think of that interview, hearing him as a Sox fan?
I mean, it's just you feel like – first of all, you think about yourself, and you know, you guys were just talking about it, but I'm 36 and I don't know if I know myself yet completely. It sounds like at 23 years old, he's got a pretty good gauge of where he is as a person. So it's really unbelievable to me. So I think as far as his professional outlook, I think he's got all the tools mentally and physically to succeed in life and on the baseball field. So you feel good. And I can't wait to see him back out there on the mound again, because we went there together to his debut.
Yes.
And how electric that atmosphere was. He just has a presence about him when he's on the mound. So you feel good as far as where that's headed. And as far as just, you know, from a Sox fan perspective, how could you not love a guy like that in your organization? You know, like we always ask for athletes to share more, you know, but in a positive manner. You know, he's not like lashing out at people on social media, taking out his frustrations that way. He just decided, well, you know what, just shut down the whole social media thing, which I wish I could do.
Yeah.
You know, so I envy him if for that. But yeah, it's just, you know, what's not to like about that kid? Rooting for him, you know.
Social media are such a cesspool, such a high percentage of the time. I tweeted and posted on Facebook today that it was nice to have Danny Parkins back at the Score. And I, you know, announced, since you did it yesterday, that you and Steph had Owen on Friday, and good to have you back. And I thanking everybody who on those formats or texting the show expressed concerns, well wishes, prayers, shared their personal experiences. And three replies in, here comes the garbage department with somebody with something completely unrelated to what I posted. And I replied back to the dude. Ooh, I almost said something. I replied back.
Dude, to that, the dude.
To the dude. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I replied, you know, typically I defend Facebook as a more genteel decorum than Twitter. You've just disproved my theory, you know, with what his reaction was. So it's just for those who, you know, don't like that sort of thing, stay the F away from it. That's the best thing you could do.
In a day and age, especially after this Astros thing where we see everyone coming out, everyone's got their own burner account, pleading on their own behalf. This guy's going the other direction. Shut it all down. I don't need it in my life. My life is fulfilling enough with, you know, my wife, with baseball, with family, with God. You know, it's so refreshing to see someone just say, you know what, I don't need it in my life, you know. And you got, and I hate, and the texters too, it's the same thing. Right. It's these, you know, just lashing out just because you can. There's no face to it. You know, guys saying, oh, he didn't get enough Christmas presents as a kid. Poor him. He's a nut job. You know, like, come on. Like, that can be a real sentiment out there if you're listening to something like that.
Not from a human being that would actually put their first and last name on it and say it to his face.
It's keyboard cowboys.
Yeah, it's cowardice.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, real people, tough behind a laptop.
Yeah. And anonymous.
Yeah.
At least on Facebook, people are willing to be jerks with their supposed first and last name, but it's still anonymous.
Yes. Surprisingly so.
Surprisingly so, but it's still basically anonymous.
It could be someone.
It could be someone else. Up, it could be a fake profile. You're not doing it to the person. Yeah, people are the worst.
I'll give you a little bit of help if I can for a few who have texted regarding some medications they've attempted. What works for one may not work for another. So if you've tried Zoloft or any other antidepressants, anti-anxieties, and it didn't work, talk to your psychiatrist, and that's who prescribes you, not your psychologist, about trying something different. And just so you know, weed now, and has been for some time, is classified as a depressant. When I started smoking pot, you know, back in the covered wagon days, Danny,
yeah,
they didn't know what to call it. They weren't sure if they should term it a hallucinogen, a stimulant. Now it is considered decidedly by the AMA as a depressant. So if you're one who suffers from depression and you're thinking you're going to benefit from it, well, you might want to have conversations with your medical team about that.
Because, yeah, I've probably been self-medicating, and maybe poorly, all of these years. It's certainly,
smoke weed every day.
It's certainly possible. So I didn't see what anyone said. I hadn't seen your Facebook post yet. I saw your very nice tweet. So if people were mean on Facebook.
Yeah, you're not on Facebook too often.
No, I'll go check it out. I'm a glutton for punishment.
Well, I prefer Facebook for the genteel approach. Not today. No, it's professional criticism. That's all.
It's fine.
Yeah, nothing to do with what I said.
I'll live.
If you don't want to follow the lead, L-E-D-E, then just stay away. Just stay the hell away. There's nothing to do with what the post was about.
Connor McKnight, I heard Mac clap-backed today at our analysis of what he said yesterday. And then, of course, they got into the name of my new son. So we will hear from our friends Dan and Connor before Dave wants that at 4 on the score.
That's kind of the thing. We're getting to a point now, at least, you know, people in my generation. There's, you know, if someone would have passed away suddenly.
Oh, wow. Look at me.
Let me ask you guys. You guys have written down, you know, if you guys pass away, you've got the life insurance. You guys have beneficiaries.
Dying. What?
Now we got one foot in the grave.
But follow me. Just follow
will.
Me.
Yes, yeah, I have a will.
Well, yeah, your life insurance policy, all that stuff. I don't have a will, but, you know, you write down. You have a beneficiary. Do you also have someone you've trusted to go delete your web history? Because that's what we're talking about at our age.
That's never a good thing.
It was questioned by them. It was questioned by us. This segment brought to you by your Chicagoland Papa John's, the new extra cheesy Alfredo pizza from Papa John's, all the craveable and flavorable goodness you want from a pizza, extra cheese and a 3-cheese blend with Alfredo sauce and garlic parmesan crust. Try it for just $10 today. Better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's. We're like, what the hell are you talking about, Connor? You're
Dan, dead. I would have to think 95% of the people hear something like that, or they think of why you would need to delete your history would be for pornography, right? That was the suspicion here yesterday.
Yeah, and also after you're dead, like, they're still going to go to your funeral, even if you had some weird tabs that you clicked on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Probably.
I would hope so. But I'm told that after we riffed on what might be on Connor's internet search history and that he was off in terms of what you would be concerned about on our generation when you die, I heard today that he went out of his way to say that he did not care about what we said while caring a lot about what we said.
You know, but one thing I refuse to take the L on is something that McNeil and Parkins were bagging on me for yesterday.
What?
I listened to this segment. I heard it. Somebody tipped me off that they were having fun with me. And that's fine. I don't mind that they're having fun with me. I don't care about it. You, yesterday in transition.
It sounds like you care about it.
I don't care that they had fun with me. I care that they're so blatantly wrong. I'm right. And they're wrong.
Why do you care so much?
And here's why it matters.
This is Connor not caring.
Yesterday,
Connor McKnight not caring.
It doesn't bother me that they think I'm being dumb. It bothers me that they're so painfully wrong about this. If you're going to make the argument that the only thing I'm referring to is porn when it's deleting your internet history.
Is that what they were doing? I confess, I didn't hear what
no, they were really worried about the category searches that I'm interested in when it comes to my online
like
viewing habits.
The subcategories, but like it's, you know, dwarf. Foot fetish.
Whatever it happens to be,
some
right?
AstroTurf
or something like that. Whatever you're into.
It's not supposed to go there.
And AstroTurf. That doesn't matter. But even if it is just what you think anybody wants to go find that, people have to comb through your internet stuff after you die now. That's just part of it. They got to go cancel your subscriptions. They got to go make sure that your estate's not being taxed for whatever $9.99 service that you had, whether it's to watch The Crown or watch some freaky weird porn. It doesn't – this – it matters now. And it's just
– What else other than porn, though?
This is – so, okay.
Yeah,
in 2018, there was a case in Michigan – where a guy had written a note on his phone, just like, oh, if ever I should die, I want this to go, whatever, blah, blah, blah. That man ended up later killing himself, like a week and a half later, and the court ruled that this note that he just wrote on his phone was enforceable as a last will and testament.
Okay.
This kind of stuff matters in the internet age, in the digital age.
Wait a sec. Is it because he lacked a last will and testament?
As far as
this a codicil, some Dickensian codicil?
No, I mean, this is the last written thing is enforceable as a will and testament. This could have outdated or post-dated the last will and testament, and this is an updated version of it. That stuff, you're going to look at me like this doesn't matter, and you're going to tell me that, like, putting away money for your kids or an actual will and testament matters, but the way that you're going to care for your digital footprint doesn't in a day and age where everything about you is online and digital? Of course it matters. It absolutely matters.
What the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, I'm confused.
This is why there's vanilla and why there's chocolate. What is he talking about?
Man.
You're right, Connor. You got us. Checkmate. I don't care. I don't care. This is me not caring, will and testament. Have I said will and testament?
Yeah.
Will and testament.
I would like to confess that that would be why I want my history deleted, to get rid of some of the porn searches. I'm willing to admit that. How about you?
Sure.
I don't think there's anything else I would be bashful about.
I'm not really embarrassed in life. Why would I be embarrassed in death?
Would you be willing to admit everything you've searched on Pornhub or on LobsterTube or wherever you find your...
LobsterTube?
Yeah. You're not familiar?
No.
Oh, man.
Can I punch it up in here for work purposes?
No,
wait a minute.
No,
wait a minute.
No.
I don't red tube.
Is that how you get the gout?
Jesus.
Oh, Tanny.
It's a walk-off.
Tanny.
It's a walk-off.
Swinging the driver, hitting it in the fairway, 300 yards, Cinderella story.
That's beautiful. Would I be proud of everything that I've searched
and/or watched? Know yet. Lobster tube. Yeah,
I don't know.
What do you think? It's a site. It's a site, and you can do searches there too.
Lobster tube.
YouPorn, Pornhub, Lobster tube, Red tube. There's all kinds of tubes.
Yeah, Max said everything on air. He can't have someone scrub the last 20 years of radio. So yeah, he's an open book, man.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've searched is heterosexual. Everything I've searched involves people of majority age, and
good.
Everything I've searched involves only humans.
I didn't know that this was a site. And by the way, it's not blocked on our work searches.
You're on that?
Oh, I'm off now because I was expecting it not to work.
Wow.
Went right through.
I gave up on it years back. Too many pop-ups.
Oh, good. I'm glad I just, I'm glad Connor went to it on this work computer. Do we have time to hear what they said about my kid, or should we do that?
Oh, of course we do.
Okay.
Sidebar, a texter has another dog that has a first and last name. It's Parkins' dog, Omar Little, because it's named after the character from The Wire.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got a dog named Omar and a son named Owen.
Yes, he has named after a TV character and a son named after a tight end.
Yep. It's going to be interesting. So the poor dog now, when they're saying... Owen might fixate on the O sound and think they're saying Omar if the dog knows its name.
That's a problem you can overcome.
And about the planning on that
one. That's fine. I wouldn't worry about it. They'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be
fine. They'll always be fine.
He's right. We will be fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, listen, my dog's so poorly trained anyway. that is going to be the least of his problems. I mean, the absolute bare minimum least of his problems is that there might be some confusion over his name.
Is there anyone that make you feel better about the birth of your child than Dan Bernstein? When my daughter was born, I put out the announcement out there. Oh, she was born 10 pounds, 8 ounces. And I'm here, Bernstein. That's a huge baby.
Yeah.
It really makes you feel good.
Yeah, that would be an Illinois record largemouth.
Yeah, it sounds like they really planned that one. And then... I felt like there was some tension in the silence when they said that they'll be fine. I felt like they were having some nice off-air dialogue.
Yeah,
that kid's not going to be fine. They're not going to be fine. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but that's what I felt in their silence. I felt judgment and sadness for my son. That's what I felt for my good friends Dan and Connor. Should I get fatherly advice, parenting advice from Dave Wanstead? He'll be fine.
Yes, speaking of guys who will be fine, yeah. He'll tell you you're wasted airtime, probably.
Okay, perfect. Dave Wannstedt next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.